Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Fuck Radio 313 The Flash production.
Into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show. My name is Kyle. I'm excited to be here. I hope you all are having an amazing, fantabulous day so far. Here at back on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. It's another great week here. We got our Wednesday episode coming at you. We'll be back again tomorrow for our second episode of the week. And it's Super Bowl week, ladies and gentlemen. Happy Super Bowl week to one. Happy Super Bowl week to all. I'm excited. I hope you're excited. We got a great show planned for you today. We're going to start off with the Super Bowl and see where it takes us from there. I got some stuff on the Brooklyn Nets. Maybe this interesting thing with Martellus Bennett, if we have time. I got some ideas for shows. Also, I do want to revisit some of this Jared Goff drama and the old Jared Goff trade. So we'll get to all that and more coming up on today's podcast. Or less, now that I think about it, not all that and more. It might be all that and less. I just got different ideas. We'll see how much we get to today. But I'm excited, and I hope that you are excited as well. We're rolling without Martez today, so I'm by myself. I'm manning the controls as well. I hope you enjoy that intro music too. I'm glad that we got the production element there. I do enjoy the music. I almost forgot. Follow on Instagram, Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, Take It Easy Podcast, if you're interested in us over there, as well as the Take It Easy Podcast, which I'm sure most of you who are listening have seen it. Find Take It Easy wherever you get your podcasts. We have episodes every day coming out, so check all that cool stuff out. Well, I mentioned Super Bowl week, and that's where I want to start with our big topic of the day. It is Super Bowl week, although it doesn't really feel like Super Bowl week. And it doesn't really feel like Super Bowl week to me for a number of reasons. Mostly, when I just compare it to what it was last year, it feels less like a Super Bowl week. And some of it has to do with the football side of it, which we'll get to later on. And some of it just has to do with the world at large. Because I think back to where I was 12 months ago. I was, one, living in a college dorm at that point. But two, it was an invigorating feeling. It was like the world was at my fingertips. Like I had branched out. I had begun whatever the next phase of my adult life would be, my path to independence or interdependence or whatever you want to call it. And now I find myself here 12 months later with a radio show twice a week, which is pretty damn remarkable in and of itself. But at the same time, I think about all of the different trials and tribulations to get to this point. And I think about where we've been from a pandemic that began, I believe March 11th is the unofficial date. If you go check out the 30 for 30 podcast on March 11th, 2020, it's really good and really well done to describe how in one day you go from the metaphoric Harvey Weinstein sentencing, and it's like just perfect metaphors where we go from that era of the Me Too movement where we're pushing for social justice, everyone is thinking about everyone else and writing past mistakes, and we're coming together as a society around common causes of social justice and initiatives like the Me Too movement, and literally in one day, it becomes everyone fending for themselves in a pandemic. It's truly remarkable how the symbolism of that worked. And that was 6 weeks after the last Super Bowl, and now here we are at the next Super Bowl. And it's been 10 and a half, going on 11 months now. It's been a full pandemic. And I realized that from where I'm sitting right now in my lovely apartment in Davis in Northern California, I think to myself that this apartment and this season and all the stuff that I've been doing on Instagram is all going to be symbolic of this year. When I look back years from now and think about my life in the grand scheme of things, I can equate this entire pandemic, this entire weird time in my life where I've had to reevaluate everything. It's like my life was put on pause, and you reevaluate all of your relationships and you reevaluate what's important to you in life and what are your priorities and how you're going to pass time and how you're going to get through school and what do you want to do if, say, for example, everything were thrown away. And it leads me over a 10 and a half month period, which included Black Lives Matter protests in the summer of George Floyd, which is really just a month of George Floyd, and Breonna Taylor, and then Jacob Blake in August, and pandemic bubbles and vaccines and drinking bleach and all the way through the line. And it leads us to this point where you find yourself sitting here on February 3rd, 2021, and it's another symbol that the year has gone by, and it's Super Bowl week. And last year was the first ever Super Bowl for multiple reasons. It was a milestone Super Bowl for me. Number one, it was the first Super Bowl since I had left home and left for college and was on my own for the first time. And number two, it was the first Super Bowl in our podcast history since I'd started covering football as a side gig, as a part-time gig, and technically towards a full-time gig. This was the first time that this had become a fruition for me. And so I'm left now in this position where the second time around has come, and it's like night and day. It's like I'm technically the same person, but also not the same person that was here 10 and a half months ago, because the pandemic technically for me began March 27th. I started online school again, and since then, it's kind of been a slope since then. Sports stopped on March 12th, and from that point going forward, you're living in this pandemic world, this new world that we're living in, because again, we're not going back to anything. We are advancing forward into whatever our new society is going to be. It's going to resemble the old society quite a bit. Some things may be indeterminable, but in the grand scheme of things, everything is changing, and it's going to take a period like an 18-month stretch where you look back on where we were before the pandemic began and you think about this is essentially for all of us a tipping point in our lives. This is a moment where we are going to look back and be like, an 18-month stretch like what we are seeing is a point where people can draw a direct line between their lives changing. And maybe that'll be the case for me, maybe it won't. But as we approach 1 year into the pandemic and the Super Bowl week, which is the official end of the sports calendar, but also there's not really anything between what was the XFL time from March 11th back to the week when the Super Bowl ended. So there are no major events from Super Bowl Sunday until March Madness on the American sports calendar. So it was as if this whole year on the sports calendar has been influenced by the pandemic, because the first major sporting event, which was March Madness, canceled. Then you go down the line. The next big sporting event would be MLB opening day, canceled. Next one down the line, The next one down the line is NBA playoffs. Nope, that got canceled. Then we go to the next thing, NHL playoffs at the same time, that got canceled as well. And then you keep going through, and it's college football, it's NFL season when that kicks off in the fall. Around August is when we start. The NBA ends, NBA free agency ends, then we get into August, and everything starts to be football, but a little bit of baseball. If you're into baseball, which I am, but other people aren't. But even by the time it gets to September when football rolls around, I faded out baseball, except last year because the Padres were really good. But also that was in a pandemic, and also I was living in this small apartment. all of that goes to say, this year's sports calendar is now coming to an end. And because there are no events between March Madness and the Super Bowl on the American sports calendar, this is the end of an entire year of a pandemic. If you want to think about it in the sports terminology, this is the final end of a year in a pandemic. Because think about it, we've gone through now a college basketball season impacted by a pandemic. They straight up canceled March Madness last year. We have gone through an NBA season with a pandemic, and we're into our second, but we went through the bubble in the NBA. We went through Major League Baseball's pandemic season. That started in July, short season, got to the playoffs. Playoffs felt semi-normal except for neutral sites and the fact that my Padres were playing in that World Series. And so all of this goes to the point where I'm looking around, and oh, sorry, I almost forgot. College football went through the whole pandemic season, even though I kind of phased out college football a little bit. I didn't watch very much college football, and it's impacted probably the way I'll view college football going forward now, as I've seen that my life just needs less college football in it. And we also went through the hockey playoffs at the same time, where I was watching three games a night every night and just getting burnout from all the live sports. But it was also all that we had because we hadn't had live sports for five straight months. The point that I was going for there is now we've gotten to the Super Bowl, and now we've gotten to a point where when I look at this Super Bowl week, it is overwhelmingly different than what we are used to. And it is a symbolic moment because I think back to where I was last year, where Super Bowl week felt intense, and it was Mahomes going for the first championship against the 49ers, who were super exciting. And I got excited because the Super Bowl was in Miami, and there was a lot of speculation and jokes, and it was like, this is the new NFL, and Brady had lost, and I'd gotten everything I wanted. And this year, Brady's back in the Super Bowl, and he's going up against our buddy Patrick Mahomes. And it just doesn't feel the same like the Super Bowl week of yesteryear. And it's an interesting point that I thought about, and I thought pretty deeply, like, if this is our reality, if this is what our world looks like at this point in time, and I feel, while it's different on the inside, I don't feel any different than I did back in March or April, even though we've gone through a pandemic and there's a lot of burnout for everyone involved, and everyone is, I mean, the overwhelming majority of people are going through a mental health crisis, as I saw on a PBS NewsHour. They're talking about 3 in 4 college students are experiencing some sort of mental health situation. And so all of a sudden, everyone is in this difficult position, and it feels like we have put life on pause for an extended period of our lives. And these are sacrifices that we're making, and a lot of times you don't have a choice because, for example, if we're pointing it to me, I think about how I would like to go to sporting events. I'd like to go to baseball games. There's a minor league baseball team in Sacramento. I'm like, that's super cool. I would want to go watch minor league baseball. I would want to go watch Sacramento Kings games. I would want to go, when I get back home, to go see the Padres play in the playoffs. And all of that goes to say, even those things have been taken away, and even if you wanted to resume some level of normalcy, it's not exactly there for the taking. So Super Bowl week represents the end of the sports calendar, and the meaning of this Super Bowl feels different to me because I'm just going through this like it's a normal week. It's not like this is some cataclysmic moment leading up to a magical 3 hours of football like it was last year, because this is now the second time I've gone through it, and it's a post-pandemic time. And I've done this with all the different sporting events, and it's super, super fascinating to see all of this play out in the way that it's playing out, because everything feels less important at this point. Everything feels different. Everything feels less consuming in my life. And maybe that's part of it, is because I recognize, look, it's been 11 months. Stuff has changed. best example of that is this radio show. Stuff has changed, but at a deeper level, things feel so much less important this Super Bowl around. And I think part of that has to do with the football. But then as I think about it, I'm like, well, if you're going through the same thing every single day, at what point do you stop feeling sorry for yourself? And at what point do you stop, you know, pursuing whatever kind of feel good to feel a sense of normalcy? And do you look around and be like, this is our fate. This is our reality. This is our Groundhog Day, which, by the way, is a great movie, which you should all watch, even if it doesn't have any non-white people in it, except for a 30-second moment where they had a black nurse, which is kind of a problem, even by 1993 standards. But anyways, when you have your Groundhog Day going on, at some point in that movie, Bill Murray just kind of decides, you know what? I'm going to make myself a little bit better, because if this is my fate and if I'm going to live the same day over and over again, I might as well learn some skills and I might as well get a little bit better every single day, even if it's not leading to anything. It's just for my own betterment and to be a better version of myself, because this is the world that I am consuming, and this is the world that I am in, and this is the hands that I have been drawn. And you know what? So be it. And now, as we come to the end of the sports year, because this is the unofficial official new year of the sports calendar, is after the Super Bowl. The sports calendar starts the Monday after the Super Bowl, and the new year is the Super Bowl, in essence. The New Year's Eve of the sports calendar is the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl is the metaphoric end of the sports calendar and the great hoorah celebration of the largest sporting event in America, because it's technically the 2020 NFL season that extends into February. And for college football, the 2020 season that extends into January for the championship. And from the football side of things, I mentioned obviously Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs' overwhelming offense. This is what we wanted, or at least this is what I wanted. Some people didn't want it, but this is what everyone should have wanted. Everyone should have wanted the greatness to be great. Everyone should have wanted Patrick Mahomes to go 16-1 in the regular season. For Patrick Mahomes to add that on to the 9-game winning streak he ended last season with, to win 25 of 26 starts. And by the way, Patrick Mahomes would win 26 of 27 starts with a win in the Super Bowl. Everyone should have been rooting for that. Not everyone was rooting for that, but everyone should have been rooting for that, because who doesn't want to see greatness? It depends which players you like and which players you don't like all in of itself. It is all about what you love. I love Mahomes, and other people love Brady. I don't love Brady because it's the one thing from childhood. My one thing of childhood football fandom that I've held on to is the disdain for Tom Brady over many, many years because of what he did to my San Diego Chargers in childhood. It's the one thing I've held on to. It's why I feel like I have so much nerves boiling up as I'm watching this game and feel so invested in what this game is going to be. But anyways, I feel myself left in a position where I'm excited, but I'm not overly excited like last year. I'm joyous, but not too joyous. I'm not going to put an entire week into Super Bowl coverage. I was thinking about trying to get part of the media day yesterday, and then I'm like, is it worth it? Is it worth the time of putting in the effort to try and find it and getting a question out of Mike Evans? Maybe it was. Maybe it would have been a cool experience. I would have liked to have been at the Super Bowl this year, would have gotten funding from all of the advertisements I've been selling throughout the season, and it would have been a cool little experience. Obviously, it's not going to happen. Maybe we'll push that to the NFL draft, but maybe that's not going to happen. So maybe we'll wait until the vaccine rolls out and you can go to different places. The point of this being, because that part's not important, this year I felt like it's just another week. Not putting a large part of my emotional stability in this football game, even if it is the end of the football season. And I think part of that is going through the 5 months where we didn't have any sports and realizing that life goes on without sports, that sports don't really matter, which should be pretty important and pretty easy to determine, but we don't think about it like that enough. But I think the pandemic shook it up because my life was generally healthier without sports for 5 months. And now the 5 months that football season is going on, it would be categorized as generally unhealthy, and an unhealthy love of football that, you know, if it's taken away tomorrow, which it technically will be taken away on Monday because it's how it works every year, I guess technically Tuesday. Monday you can still talk about the Super Bowl. But by Tuesday, kind of that post-football withdrawal has sat in a little bit. But apart from that, I keep thinking to myself that football and sports as a whole don't carry as much weight as it did. Not that I don't love doing all the stuff that I do, because I do a lot. I really love podcasting. I really love doing radio shows. And I love talking about Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense and Travis Kelce flats in the middle and Patrick Mahomes rolling to his right and Tom Brady and 4-3 defenses. And how do you combat the Chiefs offensive line injuries with the Buccaneers defensive line? And can they get to Tom Brady? And how did the Kansas City Chiefs respond to the Buccaneers wide receivers, and how much base cover four do they play? It's all fascinating, and I love all of it. But sometimes there's just the recognition that it's just not as important as it used to be. And I think this year, I think coming into this, I just kind of realized, like, the meaning of the Super Bowl is different this year than it was last year. And it probably has been different than 2 years ago, because this is the beautiful thing about change. It's why I love change so much. It's why I want more change. And I think it's the reason why I love society so much, is because of change, is because in the short term, you don't feel like things are changing. And then you look back on the macro and you realize just how different things really are. Like myself from 2 years ago, it's like night and day. Myself from, like, yeah, I guess it would be 18 months ago, it's like night and day, the two characters that are sitting in front of you. And from last year to this year, even though it's been through a pandemic where I've spent most of the time in this 15-by-10 apartment, looking around and seeing white walls all over the place and a little closet and a bed that has looked identical for months, and looking out the same window that I was looking out last March to the same sunny day, the same stoplight, the same Cowell Boulevard, and the same stop signs, it is all the same, and yet it is so different because I'm different. The things going on, change is a normal part of daily life, and it's so fascinating that it's been here for so long. It feels so ingrained, and yet it was so new 10 and a half months ago. And even as it feels identical, things change fairly rapidly, and change is only observable over a long period of time. Even when people say, like, after the Capitol insurrection or after 9/11 or after the stock market crash, even when people say, or even after March 11th, 2020 is actually the best example that has existed in my lifetime. I was technically alive for 9/11, but just barely. But anyways, even when you think about those days where you're like, okay, everything has changed, change is still observable over a longer period of time. And it's only those few moments where we can be like, wow, everything has changed, but the change hasn't been set in motion yet. One day is not enough to make change, no matter how cataclysmic the event is, which, to be fair, you can have pretty significant change day over day. There is sudden change and there is gradual change, of course. Both of those exist, but change is always observable over a longer period of time. Things may have changed on March 11th, but now we look on February 3rd of the next year, and we can really see just how much things have changed. And even when you think, well, I'm living the same life that I did back in September, you can really, really think about the change that has gone on in your life, because some things have definitely changed. Even death, which feels like a change in your life, especially when it's someone you're close to, death's change doesn't observe itself over a long period of time. And I only have that on my mind because I was thinking about that Tiger Woods documentary on HBO, that I spent 4 hours watching yesterday, which was incredible. And the storytelling is unbelievably good through the Tiger Woods story. But all of that goes into the point where I'm looking at it and like change is always observable over time. And even sudden cataclysmic events need time to see how long-term change is going to be viewed. And the best part about that is that we can't usually predict those things, which is funny when it comes to sports, because there's an entire billion-dollar industry, multi-billion-dollar industry in predicting the unpredictable, which is pretty damn cool. And I think that's part of why I love the idea of sports media so much, also from the fact that I just love sports in general, is that sports reflect society, but two, knowledge can be rewarded in things that you're seeing that other people may not see, or other people are seeing that you may not see. And some may be right, and some may be wrong, and some may be neutral. And all of those are arbitrary in the end, because I've been wrong a hell of a lot more than I've been right. And the times I feel right feel amazing. And this is especially true within context of the pandemic, where it's just like, sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong, sometimes we're in the middle. And it doesn't matter what the results are, because there's always the next result. And that's the idea of the infinite game. But that's another conversation that I'll probably hold out, because this is one of my core values, and I'll go down that rabbit hole time and time again. But anyways, it's so, so interesting to think about being right or wrong or neutral or within whatever context it might be. And so as I'm sitting here in this chair, in this room that I've been spending the whole time in, as it hits Super Bowl week, I start to think about changes observing over time. They exist, for better or for worse. It's just change. Things are always constantly changing. Even at a time like this, where it feels like to all of us, this is the least amount of change most of us have experienced in our life, or maybe it's the most amount of change that people have experienced in our life. And I'm talking about within context of like from, let's say, April to now. Maybe it's the most change you've experienced in your life, and maybe it's the least change you've experienced in your life. I don't know. Each individual situation addresses itself differently, but like the right and the wrong and the neutral thing, sometimes there's the biggest change of your life, what feels like the least change of your life, and sometimes it's just right down the middle. And you know what? It's okay to be any one of those things, whatever your situation may be. And all of that brings me back to the Super Bowl, somehow brings me back to the Super Bowl, because the Super Bowl is kind of the end of the year, and it's like an unofficial, official dedication of 1 year to the pandemic. And observing it through the sports context, which I think is probably how I view the world more than actual days and weeks, is through the context of sports, especially American sports, where the Super Bowl is the unofficial, official New Year's. It's the last day of the calendar that is always the biggest celebration. It's kind of unlike, it's like New Year's Day or like a Chinese New Year, where you're celebrating that day as the biggest holiday of the sports calendar. But it's the day that ends the year. The big finale is that Super Bowl day. And after the Super Bowl's done, it's like a new year of sports has kicked itself off. Even if there's already been NBA, it's technically the 2021 season. The NHL is technically the 2021 season. All of that to say, here we are, 1 year into the pandemic, thinking about change. And one of the things that I really got me thinking about change was how I handled and thought about Super Bowl week in a very different context than how I thought about Super Bowl week in the year prior to this. And all of that just goes to say that Super Bowl, pandemic, whatever changes have been made in your life, all of it might be observable when you think about where you were a year ago, where you're going forward, and what maybe has changed in your life, even if it feels like it hasn't. Envision yourself on a March day, on March 27th, at the beginning of the pandemic, whatever it may be, Just envision yourself in that mindset and think about where you were, where you're going, and where you are now. Because for me, we went through 5 months without sports, and I realized that sports, I'm generally healthier without sports. They don't really matter. Sports reflects society. It's the number one reason why I love sports, is because sports reflect society. But they aren't society. They mean a lot to a lot of people, and that's why a lot of people can profit dramatically off of the sports industry. It's why it's a booming industry, is because 6.7 million people tuned in to watch Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning play golf on a Memorial weekend because there hadn't been sports in 2.5 months. So 6.7 million people are tuning into that. Think how much sports care to so many people who don't give a shit about old dudes playing golf. It's so fascinating, so interesting, and all of it plays out in the grand scheme of things, is that sports matter a lot to a lot of people, but the biggest lesson I've learned through this entire pandemic, sports don't actually matter that much. And now that is all being contextualized for me within the context of the Super Bowl that I am now sharing to you, because I feel it's valuable, and because I'm just generally intrigued by it. It's very fascinating how all of that has played out in my life. And maybe in yours too, if we're being quite honest. Maybe in yours too. I just don't know your specific situation. I can address what my situation is with that, because within the context of Super Bowl week, I found it really, really fascinating. So, transition time. Should I just hit the music real quick? Is that a good way to transition? I'm experimenting with new things. Let's see if hitting the music might do a little transition here. Nah, not really feeling it right now. That's okay. Maybe we'll work closer to the end. We'll figure this out. On the podcast, there's always transitions, so I'm like, I can just usually stop talking and then gather myself and go on, but this is live radio. We can do whatever the hell we want, and that's the beauty of live radio, is that you can just mess around and make jokes like that. Here's where I want to go here. Let's talk about the Brooklyn Nets, because they have been the talk of the town for the last 2 days in basketball. Not that they haven't been the talk of the town since we had the James Harden trade get broken live on the air during our season premiere. I think that was like 3 weeks ago now. So it was 3 weeks ago today that James Harden was traded to the Brooklyn Nets, because we know this because we were live on the air as the news broke. And so that ended up being our whole podcast. That was an intense podcast, by the way. Got tons of downloads, and I appreciate that from everyone who's tuning in. That was just an intense, intense day. So anyways, back to the Brooklyn Nets. This was an amazing thing from StatMuse, and I'm going to see if I can find it real quick, but they put it out on Twitter. But this came after the Wizards game, so again, I don't know what the context is. I don't know what the context is now that they played the game yesterday from what's it called? They played the game against the Clippers that ended with an awesome Julius Randle pass. It was super intriguing. And all of this leads to the point of me thinking about the idea that here, the Brooklyn Nets, since the James Harden trade, and this is courtesy of StatMuse on Twitter, the Nets, since the James Harden trade, have a 122.6 offensive rating, which would be the best offensive rating in the history of the NBA. 122.6 offensive rating, best in the history of the sport. They also have a 119.9 defensive rating, which would be the worst in the history of the NBA, which is really, really remarkable. It's really crazy how that has gone down. And so this is an interesting thing because nobody can win a championship playing that kind of defense. Also, it's been too small of a sample size, so I don't actually think this is indicative of who the defensive unit of the Brooklyn Nets are going to be, because it just simply hasn't been a large enough sample size. Also, if Andre Drummond gets bought out, it looks like he's interested in joining the Brooklyn Nets on a cheap contract, which would be game on for the Brooklyn Nets. If you could get Andre Drummond, that is literal super team mode. That is literally Warriors bringing in Boogie Cousins. It is like you have a super team. And it's going to be pretty hard to beat them because it's Andre Drummond. But anyways, the Brooklyn Nets were short a center before the James Harden trade. And they traded their center, Jared Allen. So now they're left with just DeAndre Jordan and Jeff Green. And that is definitely not enough defensively. And I think that's a big reason why you're seeing what's happening now. They have no bigs. They have one of the worst defensive backcourts in the league, apart from Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell. And the Brooklyn Nets have, scoring a lot of points, the worst defensive rating in the league. And that game ender against the Clippers was like surviving. And guess what the final score of that game was? 122 to 119, if I'm not mistaken, which I don't believe I am. I'm fairly certain the final score to that game was let me get you the exact answer real quick. Final score was 124 to 120. And we said the offensive ratings, if you round, were 123 and 120, which means this was the most Brooklyn Nets game of the season, which is they're going to score a ridiculously large amount of points, and then the other team is just going to keep shooting, and they're going to see if you can outscore them. Now, if they play defense, I think they would start beating the living crap out of some of these teams instead of losing to the Wizards, which is why I said before, they're going to have a great defense because you're going to need to blow some teams out in the playoffs. You can't let teams keep hanging around in these close games because weird stuff can happen in these close games. Case in point, the Miami Heat went to the NBA championship. So you got to start blowing some of these teams out. And I do genuinely think they're going to get better. And there is, I don't know they're going to get better, but I assume that this is just a product of a small sample size, is that in 10 games they would have the worst defensive rating in the history of the sport. Now, do they have to make upgrades to the team? Absolutely. Every team needs to make upgrades as they come to the deadline. It's why I have a crazy four-team trade, which we will probably get to tomorrow on the radio show, about how we can potentially move Bradley Beal into a really interesting scenario and get some teams some upgrades. Spoiler alert, Bradley Beal would be going to the Utah Jazz. I digress. This is an interesting situation for Brooklyn because, like I said, probably not good enough to win the championship. However, offensively, exactly what we thought, which is this is a really fun team to watch right now. You really want to watch games when they're playing the Atlanta Hawks, where both teams are scoring in the 140s, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe it didn't go to overtime, which is absolutely ridiculous to think about. But it's fun basketball. It's just, it is fun to watch, but I know the Brooklyn Nets don't really care that much about fun to watch. This is another crazy stat from StatMuse, which is that the Brooklyn Nets, what was the final score? 132-128 was that score. That wasn't the one I was thinking of. This was back in December. No, it was, 145 to 141 in regulation. So both teams scored in the 140s without overtime. I knew I was right there. But anyways, so the Brooklyn Nets, since the James Harden trade, are 6-3 with the worst defensive rating in the NBA. Since the James Harden trade, the Houston Rockets are also 6-3 with the rating in the NBA. First of all, this is why those stats can be misleading, because who is a better team? Obviously the Brooklyn Nets. Why? Because the Houston Rockets can't score at the same rates as the Brooklyn Nets, because their best scorer is Christian Wood, and Christian Wood cannot score at the rates of a Kevin Durant. All of this goes to show to the fact that Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving are in this interesting position because they now have to figure out how this is going to work on defense. Kevin Durant is a fine defensive player. Now, he'll give you a little something in the playoffs, and you can put him potentially on your best defender, on the other team's best player. Now, not that you necessarily want that. And James Harden is good at defending on the perimeter, but not great at off-ball defense. James Harden has significantly improved his defense over the years, but there's a reason why they are so poor on the defensive rating. And Joe Harris is not going to give you very much defensively. So I think that the thing that would solve a lot of their problems is a defensive big, because all of a sudden it's daring you to not drive on James Harden, daring you to not drive on Kyrie Irving. I think that would make things a whole lot easier for you. But Brooklyn does have to figure out some of this defensive stuff, because I love the Sixers. I don't know if I believe in the Sixers come playoff time, not because of past reputation, but because of matchups. One, with the 76ers going up against the Brooklyn Nets and trying to outshoot the Brooklyn Nets, because feeding Joel Embiid, I don't think is going to keep working unless Embiid is going to be taking more mid-range. But then again, I thought the same thing of the Lakers last year, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope kind of emerged as the third guy in that offense towards the Western Conference Finals and the NBA Finals, was finally when KCP kind of grabbed the reins as the third player on that team. And I think that made a big difference. And the Sixers have that. But maybe I'm just down on the Sixers too much. They've been amazing this year. Joel Embiid might win MVP of the league. But I feel like the Bucks are a better team, and I feel like Brooklyn is still a better team, despite their defensive problems, which, again, I feel is partially a product of small sample size. I mean, they've won 7 of the games while having an awful defensive rating, but I'm sure their average margin of victory is not by very much. I mean, let's go back to the schedule here. The Brooklyn Nets are looking at loss to the Wizards, 4-point win against the Clippers, killed the Thunder. That's pretty normal. Thunder aren't any good. Overtime win against the Hawks, 13-point win against the Heat without two of their stars, Goran Dragic and Jimmy Butler. 4-point win against the Heat with same issues without their stars. No, Dragic was playing. No Jimmy Butler, but Dragic didn't play the other game. Then you go 2-point win against the Bucks. That was an awesome game. We talked about that on I think that was a couple weeks ago. We talked about that, but that was epic. That Bucks and Nets game was kind of living proof that these are the two best teams in the NBA. Because obviously, regular season games don't matter, but you're just watching this. You're like, these two teams are perfectly evenly matched. 7-point win against the Magic, 7-point win against the Knicks, 6-point win against the Nuggets, and then lose to the Thunder, lose to the Grizzlies, yada, yada, yada. So a lot of closer wins, the larger than I thought they would be. To be fair, I think they're winning games by like 6 or 7 points a game if you toss out the one Thunder blowout, because the Thunder are the worst team in the NBA. I know their record's pretty good, but the Thunder are one of the luckiest teams to start the season. That's just a little tidbit that you might want to know. They have a guy named Theo Maledon starting at shooting guard, so that'll tell you a little bit about the Oklahoma City Thunder. A little unfair to the Thunder, but still. It'll tell you a little bit about them. I don't know why I'm still talking about the Thunder. I just wanted to give that tidbit that the Oklahoma City Thunder have the largest margin of defeat, but one of the closest margins of victory, which is the sign of a lucky team. But now they're coming back down to earth a little bit and going to be pretty bad. Maybe not good enough to get a top, like, 3 odds. Maybe they'll get top 3 odds, but not get the top odds in the lottery, but they're going to have one of the best odds in the lottery. One of those things where you could get the 1 pick pretty easily, but you could also fall to like number 6 if things go poorly for you. And that leaves you in a place where you're looking at maybe getting a top player. But anyways, this was about the Brooklyn Nets. The Brooklyn Nets despite their poor defensive rating, should be fine. And these last two games have been super interesting because they've been super close, super competitive, and people want to ask questions because of how poor the defensive rating is. And I do believe that there are concerns there. But I also think that a 10-game sample size is hard to determine what is what. Now, it's fairly large. I mean, a 10-game sample size in the NFL is enough to know about a player's whatever. But in the NBA, a 10-game sample size is not a lot. I mean, 7-game sample sizes barely tell you who's the NBA champion. So 10-game sample sizes are not really enough to know exactly what the identity of a team is. And to be honest, I don't think we're going to know that until Brooklyn gets deep into the playoffs, which they're going to be. But as we talked about last week, like either Philadelphia, Milwaukee, or Brooklyn is not going to make it to the NBA Finals, which is a kind of jarring idea to think about. But at the same time, is it really that strange to ponder the idea of the Brooklyn Nets not making it out of the second round? It feels very strange to think so, but I also never doubted that the Warriors could have lost in the second round. As dominant as they were, when they played the Rockets in 2018 without Kevin Durant, I kind of felt like there was a chance that they might lose. They ended up going to 6 games and winning, but I'm like, this is the Warriors, and I feel like they might lose in the second round. The Bucks lost in the second round last year, and they were a totally overwhelming team. The Clippers lost in the second round last year. Once you get to the final eight, there's always a chance because the sample sizes aren't large enough. And it's why, partly why LeBron James is so amazing, is that he keeps defying those odds. But it's just like, yeah, anyone can lose in these rounds because the sample sizes are so small. And it's been proven time and time again that even the Warriors can lose in those rounds. Even if they made it to 5 straight NBA finals, they were an over 27 stretch away from not getting there. They were a Kawhi Leonard injury from being down 1-0 at home against the San Antonio Spurs because the Spurs were up 20 points before Kawhi Leonard got hurt in 2017. In 2016, they were down 3-1 to the Thunder. So you can always lose in these games. Once you get to the final eight, it's always possible. It's how the Miami Heat, who were very clearly a fluke, and I said it at the time, and I'm a say it now, the Miami Heat were a fluke last season, but I digress. The Miami Heat beat the Bucks last year. Now, Giannis was hurt, and I still attest that if Giannis had played, the Bucks would have won that series, but it's very possible that that was not the case because, of course, they were down 2-0 without Giannis, so it's possible, but I did say the Bucks would win that series in 5, so I felt like the Bucks could still win the series in 7. But once Giannis went down, it was over for the Bucks, and that was the other scary proposition I talked about last week, is like there is a scenario where the Milwaukee Bucks don't make it out of the second round again, at which point you are going to trade Chris Middleton. You are going to make an upgrade at that position. Maybe it's for Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen or whatever they might do, but you're damn upgrading that team. You're getting Bradley Beal. You're doing something if you don't make it out of that second round. You are getting aggressive. You're trying to go get Kawhi Leonard and negotiate a sign and trade with the Clippers. You're doing something to try and make this thing work if you don't make it out of the second round, which is entirely possible because, again, the Sixers are super duper efficient. It's like night and day from what that team used to be to what it is this year. And that's Daryl Morey's working. That is Doc Rivers as well. The upgrade from Brett Brown to Doc Rivers is significant, but that is Daryl Morey's working with what is going on in Philadelphia right now. With the fact that Joel Embiid is almost an MVP, which he was closer than most people realized. I think that's the other thing. 2 years ago, Joel Embiid at, what would his age be? 24, I'm guessing. But anyways, 2 years ago, so before the pandemic season, Joel Embiid finished Yeah, Joel Embiid was 24. So during his age 24 season, Joel Embiid finished 7th in the MVP voting. Finished 7th in the MVP voting 2 years ago. Last year, everything fell apart for the 76ers. So Joel Embiid was closer than people realized. And he might not win it this year. Most people have LeBron winning it. I think Giannis' stats are comparable to past seasons, but because everyone's getting tired of voting Giannis, he's not going to win the MVP this year. 27 points per game. The three-point percentage is way down. 11 rebounds, 6 assists. So, yeah, stats are fairly comparable to what he's done throughout his MVP stretch. So I think he's in that conversation, too. Not that he's going to win it, but someone's not going to get there, whether it's Kevin Durant, whether it's Joel Embiid, or whether it's Giannis Antetokounmpo. And if we're just doing it like that, I'm pretty sure Embiid is the odd man out. If we're doing it based on who the best players are, I'm pretty sure I'm taking Embiid out. But based on statistics so far this year, when you look at Kevin Durant, Joel Embiid, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, it looks like the best player in the NBA, which is Giannis Antetokounmpo, might be the odd person out on this one, which would be jarring if they fall short of the second round, because you know they are shaking the hell up out of that Roth idly by. And even though Giannis has signed his extension, he can get his way out. That is a given, as we've seen by Nolan Arenado and Deshaun Watson and James Harden and Giancarlo Stanton. Giannis can get his way out if he wants to, which means the Bucks got to make some moves. And that might include a 3- or 4-team Bradley Beal trade. Maybe I'll have to go back to the old trade machine to try and fire that one up. As we try and we'll talk about that 4-team trade probably tomorrow. Yeah, maybe I don't think we'll do it on the podcast. So I think that'll be tomorrow's radio show. Actually, I got 7 minutes right now, to be honest. I got 7 minutes. Let's go through this real quick. So the trade I had proposed is basically an apropos 4-team trade. So Bradley Beal goes to the Utah Jazz and coming back the other way, going to the Philadelphia 76ers are Joe Ingles, Royce O'Neal go back to the 76ers. To the Boston Celtics goes Bojan Bogdanovic. And going to the Washington Wizards is Danny Green, Tristan Thompson, and 7 first-round picks. Go to the Wizards. So that's the trade. Jazz get Bradley Beal. 76ers get Joe Ingles and Royce O'Neal. Celtics get Bojan Bogdanovic. And the Wizards get Danny Green, Tristan Thompson, and 7 first-round picks, as well as 3 second-round picks as well. So 3 second-round picks, sure, but 7 first-round picks, not pick swaps, 7 first-round picks. And that chalks up to 4 Utah Jazz picks, 2 Boston Celtics picks, and 1 Philadelphia 76ers pick. So from the Boston side of things, they're just getting Bogdanovic to kind of fill the Gordon Hayward role, because when Gordon Hayward left, they never really filled that role except for just plugging in Aaron Nesmith. So that would be kind of get Bogdanovic as a cheaper replacement for Gordon Hayward that they feel like they kind of need because they're just sitting in 4 right now. But the only way to really get close to the Sixers or the Sixers or the Bucks or the Nets is to get a better star than Jason Tatum, which right now the game plan seems to be just wait and see what Jason Tatum becomes. So in the meantime, might as well get Bogdanovic and just see if you can upgrade him. For the Sixers, it's just upgrading from Danny Green to Joe Ingles and adding the bench depth of Royce O'Neal for a first-round pick. Meaningless first-round pick down the road, they'll hang on to that. And for the Jazz, it's going all in on your core 5. Going all in on Donovan Mitchell, Rudy Gobert, Mike Conley, Bradley Beal, and Derek Favors, and Jordan Clarkson coming off the bench. So you're going all in on that team to win. Because right now Utah has been one of the most remarkable starts to the season. And we know the Clippers and Lakers are better than the Jazz. just because the Jazz best player is Donovan Mitchell and the Lakers have LeBron and Anthony Davis, both of whom are better than the Utah Jazz's two best players. And because the Clippers have Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, both of whom are better than Donovan Mitchell, even though they're all-stars. Maybe Donovan Mitchell is better than Paul George. Who knows? The point being, the Jazz need to go all in right now. Because how often does a Bradley Beal become available? Twice a year? Once a year? Does a Bradley Beal-level player become available in the trade? So give them the 7 first-round picks. And, of course, you're working the other two teams in because the Wizards would prefer draft picks instead of – the Wizards would rather draft picks instead of going to get players like Bogdanovich and O'Neal and Joe Ingles. It doesn't really help them. They'd prefer the draft picks. So for the Wizards, all about going for that top pick. So your own draft picks are what are going to build the foundation of a rebuild, and trading away Bradley Beal is going to set yourself up so that maybe sometime in the near future you can acquire another Bradley Beal. It's entirely possible. We'll see how it gets going, but that's kind of just the game plan at this point, is can you acquire another Bradley Beal down the road? That's what the point of all these trades are. The Pelicans are sitting there with all of their assets. They could go get Bradley Beal if they wanted to. With all the assets they got from the Brandon Ingram trade, yeah, they could go get a Bradley Beal if they wanted to build around Brandon Ingram. Did I say Bradley Beal? Anthony Davis trade? Yeah, you can build around Brandon Ingram and Zion and Bradley Beal. That'd be a pretty damn good team. They're not going to do it right now, but they could with all the draft picks that they have. But the point being, for Utah, it's obviously worth going all in. And for the Heat, it's worth going all in. It's just the question lies for the Bucks: is it worth it to go all in and trade for Bradley Beal? If you're the, I don't know, who else would be? The Denver Nuggets, would it be worth getting a Bradley Beal and giving up Michael Porter Jr.? I attest yes. I think it's a similar situation to the Jazz. But the Lakers, Clippers, Bucks, Nets, and 76ers are kind of in that position. For the Sixers, would you trade Bradley Beal for Ben Simmons? Because I really wouldn't. It's like, is it worth it for those five teams? Those five teams that we know are the best of the best. And it's the four that we already knew, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Nets, and the Bucks. I'll throw the Sixers in there for now. But I feel like the Sixers are kind of the team that's just kind of there. But, you know, I don't have total confidence in the Sixers because I don't know what Joel Embiid is. He's been awesome so far this year, but I don't know if that's just too small a sample size talking and if Joel Embiid will come back down to earth come playoff time. I feel like it's feasible, if not promising, but it's interesting to plan all of that out. But anyways, if you're one of those teams, it's a question mark. If you're Utah, if you're Denver, if you're Miami, if you're one of these second-tier teams, it makes sense to go get a Bradley Beal, for obvious reasons that he can be a balance of power, the same way James Harden was a balance of power for the Brooklyn Nets across the rest of the league. And for these other teams, it's like a balance of power move to get you into that elite tier. It's not to get you to a championship. It's to get you into the conversation. So the same way that it worked for all these other dudes, it can work for our buddy Bradley Beal. Obviously, he's not available. I guess the next best option is Zach LaVine, but we'll see how all that plays out in the near future. That is that crazy trade scenario that I had, and I got it in there just in time. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in to the Take It Easy radio show. Again, check out the podcast everywhere you get your podcast. Check out the all of the other great content on Open Talk Radio, 313 The Flash, and continue to support us. Instagram, Open Talk Radio, 313 The Flash, Comical Sports Memes, Take It Easy Podcast. You can find us there on all of the various platforms. We'll be back again tomorrow with more good content. So thank you, everybody. And as always, take it easy. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.